Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our 20th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni. On Twitter, you can find me at TechNinjaTodd. I am excited today to be one of your co-hosts. Just for those of you who aren't familiar with Edu All-Stars, we host weekly interviews with difference makers in education to allow them to share their stories and their passions. Here with me today, I have my co-hosts.
I'm Stacey Huffine, otherwise known as TechNinjaStacey on Twitter.
My name is Chris Kessler. I'm an 8th grade science teacher, and you can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
And we are very excited to say that this week's guest is the United States Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. So thank you, Mr. Duncan, Secretary Duncan, for coming on with us today. We really appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time.
Thanks for the opportunity. Do I get to be an honorary ninja by participating?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, there you go. Yes, you got it.
Ninja for a day?
There you go. You can be our ninja for the day. We'll definitely give you that.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we always like to hear from our guests a little bit about their journey from where they started out in education to where they are now. So can you tell us a little bit about your path to becoming the Secretary of Education?
It's a long journey, and this job was never sort of my life's ambition or anything like that, but I grew up on the south side of Chicago. My dad taught at the University of Chicago for a couple decades, and my mother ran an inner-city tutoring program that was only like a mile and a half from our house, but just a totally different community, all African-American, very poor, lots of gang issues, and literally raised my sister and brother as a part of her program from the time we were born. So I grew up teaching and being taught. That was her philosophy. You know, 10-year-olds taught 5-year-olds, 15-year-olds taught 10-year-olds, and actually ended up taking a year off from college to work with her full-time and try and figure out, is this really what I want to do with my life? And a lot of my friends are going on to be investment bankers and lawyers, and that didn't feel like what I wanted to do. And basically during that year said, this is what I want to do. So I, after I graduated from college, played professional basketball for a couple of years overseas. That was always been my other passion. And then came back and started, along with my sister, running our own after-school program, actually working out of the same church basement as my mother. We started that in 92. In 95, there was an opportunity to create small public schools, outside groups, nonprofits like ours. So we applied to the Chicago Public Schools to try and create a great neighborhood public school in our community, because the schools there were really, really tough. Did that. And then the children I was working with that were part of an I Have a Dream program were going on to college. And so it was a fork in the roads for me. We could keep working with another 40 kids and their families or do another school of 400. But then I had an opportunity to go work for the Chicago Public Schools, and there are 400,000 children there. And decided for all the challenges, I thought if I really wanted to take to scale what I thought would help kids, that it's easier to throw stones and critique from the outside, but you have to really go inside to make a difference. So worked there for a couple years. Then when the previous CEO left, the mayor asked me to run the Chicago Public Schools. Did that for 7.5 years. And then the president became the president. And my dream was always to do at least 10 years in Chicago. I worry so much about stability or instability and people jumping from job to job. And I really didn't want to leave, but this was honestly the only job in the world that it's not too often that your good friend and someone you have tremendous confidence and faith in becomes president, sort of a crazy thing. And so it's been an amazing 5 years. It's flown by, and I feel so lucky every day to have had the opportunity. I still pinch myself sometimes.
Right.
Amazing.
So we're in the final days of Connected Educator Month, and as educators, we've been connected for about a year or so on Twitter, and that's exactly how we kind of reached out to you. We sent a tweet out just asking if you'd come on, and sure enough, we got a response there. So we've seen that power that exists by connecting with and learning from people from every sector of education. And we've recently noticed that you've really started following and interacting with a lot of educators through platforms like Twitter. You even participated last night in the hashtag EdTech chat.
That was a wild night.
Yeah. So what value do you see for yourself in becoming connected through social media?
Well, it's so helpful for me to learn. And I always say, if I just sit in my office here in Washington and try and think I can come up with great ideas to help education, that's really the height of arrogance, quite frankly. And I try and travel to schools virtually every single week. I'll be in Kentucky and Ohio this week, actually in Haiti next week, which will be very, very interesting. But you can only be in, you know, we have 100,000 schools, can't get to them all, but using technology, using social media to reach out to fantastic teachers and principals and educators around the country, it's a phenomenal way for me to learn, to try and get a better sense of what's working is not, to get great feedback, you know, from teachers like yourselves. So it's been hugely beneficial to me. I'm a relative newcomer to social media, but have really enjoyed it. Last night was actually fantastic. First time I've ever done anything like that. It's a huge outpouring of you know, interest. And I want to continue to get more sophisticated. And again, it's the best way I know how to learn.
Well, the chat was pretty crazy last night. It moved really fast. There were a lot of people participating.
It was warp speed. I was like exhausted at the end of it.
Yeah. We definitely leave the chats very exhausted, but I can just imagine because I know everybody was talking about getting on there to watch to see how it was going to go.
But it was really fun. It's actually interesting. It's a little bit of adrenaline. You know, you're trying to keep pace and keep up as much as you can. And again, lots of thoughtful comments. And the thing for me is just there's so many amazing teachers across the country who are doing the real hard work every single day. And as you know, as passionate as I am and my team is, you know, we're not teaching third graders how to read and do math. We're not teaching, you know, biology and chemistry. And you guys are doing the real work. And if we're helping and supporting you, then I feel really good about our work. If we're not doing that, then we're not doing our jobs. And so whatever we can do to listen, to learn, to be responsive, to be supportive. And again, technology and Twitter have been fantastically helpful in helping us have a better reach and to hear many more voices.
Well, and you know, like we mentioned before, all three of us here are consider ourselves connected educators who interact with people from all over the world and learn from them constantly. And you know, one thing we did before this interview was we kind of asked some of our connected educator friends to talk with their classes about maybe something the students would like to ask you. And Drew Minock and Brad Wade are third and fourth grade teachers at Eastover Elementary in Michigan. And Mr. Minock's class came up with a question they wanted us to ask you. And so they wanted to know, are you trying to make sure all students have technology to help them learn?
It's a great question, obviously very appropriate to this forum, and I'm a huge fan of technology. I think technology can be so important in increasing equity and driving an equity agenda and also raising the bar in terms of excellence for all students. And we know that if we don't provide access across the board, technology can actually divide between the haves and the have-nots, the digital divide. So the stakes here are really high to do this the right way. One thing I'm very, very hopeful about is our ability working with the FCC through the E-rate program to dramatically expand access to high-speed broadband across the country. You know, take a present talked about in the State of the Union, it was to reach 99% of schools. So it's a huge chance to do the right thing there. We're also pushing very, very hard school districts. I'd actually be curious in your schools and your districts. As a nation right now, we spend $7 to $9 billion each year on textbooks. And I'm always going to be the greatest proponent for more investment and more resources for education, but we have to be honest with ourselves about our existing resources. I don't think having kids have 30 and 40-pound backpacks makes much sense, and I don't think spending that money on textbooks that are literally obsolete the day we buy them, the day they enter your schools and your classrooms, I don't know why we continue to do that as a country. And we have a small number of districts who have moved from print to digital. We're trying to encourage that. I think we should go to print from print to digital absolutely as fast as we can for the country. And the fact that with scarce resources in every classroom, I'm sure including yours, needing more resources, not less, the fact that we spend so much money on something that is, you know, from a previous generation, previous century, it's not wise. It's not wise. And so that's controversial when I say that. Not everyone agrees with me, but I always try and be very honest.
Right.
Well, every day each of us faces different challenges no matter what sector we work in. What would you say is one of the biggest challenges that you've had to face since taking office?
There are a couple challenges. I first say I've been amazed at how much progress we've been able to make, so in big picture feel very, very good about it. A couple challenges. One is one I just talked about, that I just fundamentally think education is an investment, not an expense. And I always say if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. And I continue to want our country to invest more at every level in high-quality early childhood education, which I would argue is the best investment we can make, greater investment in K-12, and then we have to make college more accessible and more affordable, so the whole sort of cradle-to-career continuum. So challenging the country to increase investments rather than cut back And obviously, it's been a tough economic period, but we have to educate our way to a better economy. And so I don't think as a nation we take seriously enough how important that is. That's been one frustration. Related is, for me, education should never be about politics, and I'm totally non-political. I could care less. But somehow you have the political debate, particularly here in Washington, where I think as a nation we're too often self-destructive, and the shutdown was a huge example of that. There's just no upside. There's nothing good about that for kids or for education. Yeah. Sequester, we had cuts to, you know, Head Start and special ed and Title I, and so this is money that's being cut for poor children, for children with disabilities. Why is that a good thing? Who are we helping there? It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So pushing for greater investment, pushing folks to work together, throw out politics and ideology. And then I want to continue to challenge people to raise expectations for students. And it's amazing to me, everywhere I go, more and more schools where you have sophomores and juniors and even freshmen taking college-level classes. And these are inner-city kids. These are first-generation college goers. The more we challenge students, the more we have high expectations, the more we take into account the difficulties they might face at home in the community, but recognize the only way they're going to overcome them is through educational opportunity, continue to raise expectations and increase student achievement. Those three challenges, and they're related, are ones that we try and push on and challenge every single day.
Well, we know we have you for a limited amount of time, so we just want to, you know, one question we always try to end with our guests is finding out something they're passionate about right now. But right before this interview, we were tweeting out that we were excited to get to chat with you and an educator in Missouri named Bob Dylan, who is IdeaGuy42 on Twitter. He gave us a really great, what we thought was a great closing question for you, and it's if that we want you to dream big and describe to us what you see in for education.
Well, I appreciate the question. So a couple things. Spending a huge amount of time now and again traveling the country, we desperately want to increase the number of students who have access to high-quality early childhood education. And the fact that so many of our children from disadvantaged communities start kindergarten a year to a year and a half behind simply makes no sense to me whatsoever. So if I were to dream big, I would want universal access to high-quality early learning opportunities from birth all the way to five. We have to stop playing catch-up. We have to level the playing field. So that would be a starting point for me. On the K-12 side, again, going back to high expectations, the chance to take high school-level classes in 7th and 8th grade, the chance to take college-level classes, AP, dual enrollment classes, early college, those types of opportunities. I would love everyone to graduate from high school either with college credits in their back pocket or an industry certification, so World of Work or college, but prepared to pursue their dreams, whatever they might be. And then ultimately, the president's challenged us. We used to lead the world in college graduation rates a generation ago. We're now 12th. That's nothing to be proud of. And I'm just convinced in a globally competitive economy, jobs are going to go to where the best educated workforce is. So for me, the North Star of all this work would be to, again, raise our college graduation rates and lead the world to be number one.
So just one final question. And we know that you were played basketball with Harvard. So one-on-one, you versus President Obama, you're on the hard court. Who wins that game?
I plead the fifth on that one.
Good answer.
I'm trying to stay employed.
Good, there you go.
Well, we Secretary Duncan...
We have some fun together. That's our stress relief, and it's good to be out there and play.
Well, Secretary Duncan, we wanted to tell you thank you very much for coming on our show today and giving us just a couple minutes of your time. We are some educators in a little town in Texas, and so we are thrilled to get to chat with you and just have you share a couple things with us.
Well, thanks for the hard work. Thanks for the difference you're making for our children every single day. And for those who were watching who participated last night, that was a heck of a lot of fun as well. Keep up the great work. And really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
For those of you that are listening, we wanted to let you know that some other ways you can connect with us are via Twitter. We have an EduAllStars Twitter account called EduAllStarsHQ. You can check out our website to see the other 19 interviews that we've done at EduAllStars.com. And we are also available on iTunes if you search the words EduAllStars with no spaces.
We have, how do you say her name? Lots of great guests coming up, including fourth grade teacher Paula Noggle tomorrow, which is Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central Time, and Pernille Rip next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central Time as well.
And just if you're stuck around this long, we hope you enjoyed the show. Just encourage you to subscribe via iTunes and just leave a rating and feedback. That really helps us with people getting eyeballs on the program. The higher you're rated in iTunes, it makes a huge impact on how many people see the podcast and listen to it. So if you liked it, leave us a great rating. If you don't, you know what I always say, then go away. All right.
Thank you all for watching. See you tomorrow.
Bye.